Mystic Fix, a program for the whole being, with Julia Gordon-Bramer on News Talk STL.
Welcome to Mystic Fix. I'm Julia Gordon-Bramer. Where are you going? Personally, professionally, spiritually? Do you believe in time travel, past lives, an afterlife? This episode of Mystic Fix is aligned with the Chariot Tarot card, who is ambitious and driven, as well as a card for all kinds of travel, physically and spiritually. And on the subject of spiritual travel, I have two fascinating authors on this show, Mark Mirabello, who wrote A Traveler's Guide to the Afterlife, and Von Brashler, who has just released Seven Secrets of Time Travel. First, let's meet Von. I am talking to author Von Brashler, who wrote Seven Secrets of Time Travel. This was recently published with Inner Traditions. Welcome, Von.
Hi, nice to be with you.
Hi, thanks. So tell us a little bit about Seven Secrets of Time Travel. This is obviously not in the physical realm we're talking about, right? Speeding up airplanes or anything like that. This is more a spiritual astral travel, correct?
Yeah, it's like astral travel. I think to really travel beyond space and time, you need to travel in an energy body that would be including the astral body. It would include the mental body, the causal body, the higher spiritual bodies, what we would call our energy bodies or subtle energy bodies, that each one corresponds to a plane of existence just as real as the physical plane and actually impact the physical plane.
Okay, so you've mentioned a number of different kinds of bodies here.
Yeah.
How do we know which body we're moving in?
Well, ideally, you go in all of them. I think the trick is to reach a point of accessing an inner self. The inner self would be the spirit self, would be where your consciousness really resides, not your mental consciousness, not your physical mental consciousness, but a higher spiritual consciousness that connects you to the greater cosmic consciousness all around us and in all.
Okay, so this is very much a form of meditation, correct?
Yes, it is. Meditation would be a primary way that people would reach this inner consciousness or this spirit to unlock the inner spirit within you. It is not the only way. You could do it in a lucid dream, which you could actually program to have a lucid dream. You could do it in a daydream. It could be a deja vu moment. You know, it could be a moment of enlightenment when you're in nature and in experiencing the wonder in all of creation, that sense of being one with all.
Von, in a previous conversation that you and I had, I shared that as a child, I had a very magical moment. I was probably 7 or 8 years old, and I was walking through a cow pasture by my home, and I came upon a little stream, and there was a peach tree growing, and daffodils were wild on the banks of this stream. And it was one of those Jungian kind of peak experiences where, you know, everything just seemed to be right. And it was my place of peace. And for a long time, I used to go there. And I realize, in hindsight, I was meditating. And, you know, it was just my place to kind of unplug, get away from a family that was falling apart. And I still go there today, even though it's long gone and I've moved 1,000 miles away. But it is my place in my consciousness to root into and return to. The only other place I do this is the beach, where I feel completely one with nature and complete relaxation. And so you would say this is a form of astral travel too, correct?
In this case, when you return to it, yes. I mean, I have a similar place that I established when I lived in on Mount Hood in Oregon. And it was beside a river. It was beside the river. It was in a grove of trees, a little forest woodland lot area, and it was perfect, you know. And I arranged the rocks, and I arranged, you know, some of the leaves, some of the flowers, vegetation there. And I have to tell you, the sky parted, and a big cloud in the shape of a woman's face smiled down upon me. I don't tell that story to many people, but you, Julia. But it is a special place. And then when you've been there, you can lock it into your consciousness. It is a place you can return to, you know, and I encourage people to have a place like that. It's a healing place. It's a special place. It is your special sacred place.
I think it's a place of sanity, especially in these hard times, don't you?
Yes, yes. We're not really fixed into this space and time, except that we're fixated on this space and time. And therein lies the problem. You know, we are ruled by a three-dimensional view and five physical senses. So we're fixated on where our feet are positioned on the ground and what we see around us at this moment with our limited perceptive skills, physical perceptive skills. But there is a greater set of perceptive skills, which would be called awareness. And right. Awareness comes from the spirit within, our inner intelligent energy that we would commonly call consciousness, which is our link to cosmic higher consciousness.
Right. I think Albert Einstein said, time is an illusion, albeit a persistent one.
Absolutely.
So if somebody were to pick up your book, Seven Secrets of Time Travel, would they be expected to be, you know, masters at meditation? Or do they have to have any skills to benefit from time travel or to pursue it?
Well, that's a good question. And people think, oh my gosh, I can't begin to follow Einstein down this rabbit hole. It's even he couldn't figure out how to actually do it. He could just tell you that we all have a subjective different approach to time and experience time differently. You know, your perception of time might be different from ours. When you're in a fire or an accident, you perceive time very differently, don't you? So we see we can stretch time or condense time. And it is a skill that you acquire when you learn that you have this perceptive skill, when you tap into your inner awareness.
That's so interesting. I'm sort of a fitness buff, and I think of times my schedule has been really crammed, and I think I couldn't possibly fit in a walk or a workout. But when I do, it seems that time expands for me, and I can somehow make room for everything on my list, even though it didn't seem like I had time to take care of myself. So yeah, I never thought of it like that as a form of time travel.
I like the quotation of John Lennon, life is what happens when you're busy making plans.
Yeah, right. Are there many different kinds of astral travel? It seems to me, in my work as a tarot card reader and a psychic, that we can return to the past and do some healing.
Yeah.
Sometimes we can have conversations with people who have passed to heal our own stuff and to get our own understanding. We can get futuristic. I have met and I have people who are planning to come to my show who believe that they are talking to aliens. Do you include that in your spiritual sort of realm?
Well, I guess the short answer is yes. I think that there are many voices out there, many spirits, and there are many realities, alternate realities, alternate planes of existence, alternate universes, and alternate version of you, you know, and to experience all of that is to become fully alive and aware and to integrate and to begin to grow as a spiritual person on this great, great journey that we're all on that we call life's journey. And this journey can be a hero's journey.
Right, which is echoed by the Fool card in the tarot. And as I told you, I asked you onto this particular show, which is aligned with the Chariot, which is all about travel in various ways. So you are, of course, perfect with the idea of astral travel. And travel is inner and outer, right?
Yeah.
We can have deeply moving experiences without going anywhere.
Absolutely.
Or we could go to sacred sites. And sometimes, just like when I told you about that little place from my childhood, that's a sacred site to me, even if it's not a temple or an altar.
Absolutely. Our physical body is limited as to where we can go in time and space, but our spirit, our inner consciousness, is pure energy, intelligent energy, and it can go virtually anywhere, irregardless of limitations of time and space. And so, yes, absolutely, you can go to any of these places.
Yes, and science has proven that everything is energy, Everything comes down to moving atoms. You know, a big affecting book for me, now this is really dating me, but Jonathan Livingston Seagull. I don't know if you remember it, that book and how the seagull transcended time and space.
A profound book.
That's probably going back to 1976 or something. I know I read it when I was just a girl, but that impacted me in ways of thinking about the world and that we don't have the limitations we think we do. Isn't it interesting how certain things come to us? Who would have thought a sixth grader would pick up this paperback about the seagull and be spiritually transformed?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, we sometimes think of these things as far out. You know, shamans do this, mystics do this, others who can transcend into alternate states of consciousness can do this, but the average person cannot. It's like everybody can. The psychiatrist puts you on the couch and you go back to when you were a child. But then we see in books like Journey of Souls, where you can go into your past lives. And that's been documented time and again, thousands of times over. And sometimes people will say, well, aren't you really talking then in this sort of approach to time travel of interdimensional travel? And they say, well, yes, because we're limited in the physical world to a three-dimensional reality. We're going beyond those three dimensions.
Yeah. And I would say to people who sort of poo-poo the idea, there's so much healing in it, you know, that who cares if your physical body is or isn't going there? We don't have a way to prove the consciousness or where the consciousness is going. We can't measure that.
It's very subjective, and every person sees this, and it's never photographed, right?
Yeah.
There are no recordings of this. So you come back, but I mean, I encourage people to find a place that, like you found in nature and like I found in nature and others, because that is a special healing place. It is a place where your soul can be enriched, and you could observe things, and you can return to this place over and over again. It is a very special place.
Isn't it interesting? Nature. It all comes back to that, which is another element in the first card of the major arcana in the tarot, the Fool card. And he is our Bacchus, our Dionysus. From nature, the original, what they call the base man who is yet to develop, who has a long, long journey ahead. But that's where our peace is.
Some people call it the green man, right? You know, yeah. It's the hornwood in the forest, you know, and it is an archetype, sure, going back to Jung. It calls to us to explore nature, because nature can unlock all of this, because nature knows all of the cycles. It knows that time is endless because the seasons continue, one flows into the other. And so it is with all of life. It all transforms into another. There is no death. In life, as most of us experience, it does not exist because we're not fully awake. We're in the sleeping phase, waiting to awaken.
Now you're making me think of the Garden of Eden story in the Bible, because it says they fell asleep, but it never says they woke up. And I've always been entranced by that idea, that even in the Bible, it's all very Buddhist. This is all the illusion that sin, the world, the troubles, the pain, it's here for us to learn and manage, perhaps.
Secrets are all around us, and they're just planted everywhere in nature where we can see it and enjoy it and learn from it. You know, for most people, when they fall asleep and have these lucid, vivid dreams, it may be the first time in their life that they're fully awake.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? And there's so much richness in dreams, the symbolism. That's a whole other show, of course. Well, Vaughn, in our last minute, what would you like to leave with our listeners? Is there something that they could practice now, even before they get your book?
Sure. I mean, all of life is to be explored. You know, the great journey is not just getting up and making coffee as I start my everyday. But it is much, much more, you know, and we are here to grow and to explore and to enrich our souls in this everlasting thing we call life's destiny, life's journey, the mission of the soul. And it is truly a journey that one walks alone, And it is an inner journey inside yourself.
Vaughn, how can people reach you if they want to connect with you?
I try to keep my Amazon Writers site updated. And or you can go to my Facebook, and you can see all the pictures of nature that I include. It's facebook.com/V Brashler. I'll be in Chicago in October for Infinity Foundation. There'll be a workshop which could be accessed even online, and we'll be discussing a lot of these questions.
Wonderful. Before we go, I wanted to add that your publisher, Inner Traditions, will be giving away one free copy of your book, Seven Secrets of Time Travel. Go to mysticfix.com for that. I want to thank you so much for your time, Vaughn. You were great. Next up, author Mark Mirabello discusses his latest release, A Traveler's Guide to the Afterlife. Maybe you've been there? I guarantee we'll all go there one day. I'm Julia Gordon Bramer, and this is Mystic Fix on 101.9 and 94.1 News Talk STL.
You're listening to Mystic Fix with Julia Gordon Bramer on News Talk STL.
And we're back. I'm speaking with author Mark Mirabello, author of A Traveler's Guide to the Afterlife, Traditions and Beliefs on Death, Dying, and What Lies Beyond, a new release with Inner Traditions. Dr. Mirabello is professor at Shawnee State University. His expertise is on outlaw history on the frontiers and margins of human civilization. I love that. Dr. Mirabello, you lecture on alternative religions and cults, secret societies, terrorism and crime, banned books, and so much more. So welcome to Mystic Fix.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. I mean, by coincidence, it was 41 days to today that my mother passed away.
Oh.
And we were talking about afterlife concepts. And for the record, since I have a book on the subject, I firmly believe there's another side. And we should spend a good part of our life now preparing how to properly navigate the distance between the two worlds.
I love that. So I have just been kind of combing over your book. I haven't given it a proper thorough read yet. I was really impressed. You've got 965 sources. This book is well researched. And
thank you.
Yeah, and you get into all sorts of traditions and history, which of course is your background. Your book states that an afterlife is possible without a god or a soul. Can you explain?
Yes. The trouble is, in the Western world, we are scientifically and technologically advanced, but by and large, the population is very primitive when it comes to metaphysics. The late Professor Zimmer at Columbia noted that our metaphysics has not changed since the 18th century. No new idea. He's absolutely right. And there's just money passed. Now, I should mention, there are many cultures that have no god. Again, in the book I mentioned, there's 35 different cultures. The Aboriginal people of Central Australia did not have the concept of a god. That used to really alarm people in the 19th century. But every culture on Earth has the concept of an afterlife or another existence beyond death. I'm not trying to denigrate the notion of God. If your audience is believers, that's fine.
They're all different.
Yes, there's a wide variety of beliefs. In fact, in Buddhism, they say there's 88,000 paths to the other side. And one of the purposes of my book was to identify some of the paths. Now, for example, in Buddhism, there's no soul at all, but there is an infinite number, almost infinite number of future, the transmigration of souls until you can achieve nirvana and release. And what actually survives is essentially your desire for life, keeps us in this endless cycle of rebirth. Also, you have the concept of block time. Professor McTaggart at Cambridge University wrote a really interesting article around 1900 regarding block time. And Kurt Vonnegut wrote a novel which involves block time. And that means that all time exists all the time. Right now, any listener in your audience, their great-great-grandmother is a two-year-old playing on the floor. Right now, somewhere, I am a seven-year-old. And block time means all time exists simultaneously. And essentially, when you die here, you just start over. Your life begins anew. Now, that's a strange eternal life because you're living the same life over and over again, but it's forever. So you have that concept.
Hard also, to wrap you your mind that. Around.
Yeah, and there are some other concepts as well, but a soul is actually unnecessary. a god is unnecessary. We tend to think, now, by the way, the notion that a god is necessary in Hinduism is called bhakti yoga, where you're saved through a savior god, if you will. Evangelical Christians talk about being saved by their believing in Jesus. Even if they're sinners, Jesus will save them. And again, the Hindus would call that bhakti yoga. They have a similar concept. If you love Vishnu or Shiva, you go to a paradise. And I should let your audience know the phrase Namu Amida Butsu. That's from Pure Land Buddhism. And if you say that once in your life, according to Pure Land Buddhism, you go to a paradise after death.
Hmm.
And again, by the way, there's many, many ways, many notions.
And so please say it again. Nama Amida.
Namu Amida, Amida Butsu. That's Butsu. The Japanese form. The Chinese is kind of more difficult to pronounce, but okay. Namu Amida Butsu.
Namu Amida
Butsu. And in English... Yes, sorry.
So I've just said it, so I'm safe now,
you're
right?
You're safe. And by the way, in English, I take refuge in the Buddha of infinite light. In Buddhism, everything is thought. This is called non-dualist thought. They think the entire, everything, the universe and so forth, is basically thought. And when a Buddha achieves, there are many Buddhas in Pure Land Buddhism, not just one. There are infinite number of universes, infinite number of Buddhas. You remember the opening statement in Star Wars, perhaps, in another galaxy long, long ago, far, far away. That's an idea from Buddhism, if nothing else. And if a person achieves nirvana, relief, but does not feel comfortable unless the entire, all sentient being are also released, that creates a pure land, which is a kind of paradise. And the purpose of that is you go there to achieve nirvana. Now, most Easterners view it basically the end zone, if you will, the final destination. Technically, it's not, but it's this idea that his thoughts have created this wonderful place. Now, I should mention the skeptics in your audience, the scientists, will talk about matter and energy only are important. But Professor Kripal from University of Chicago kind of famously said, based on the writings of Charles Fort, that's a half truth masquerading as the whole truth. We have the smallest universe of almost any civilization, because we completely exclude other levels of reality and existence. In Jainism, which is an Indian religion, there are more gods in the universe than there are humans. They outnumber us. And again, we completely ignore this. What I tried to mention in the book are all these complex notions and so forth, different paths, different ways.
Okay. You know, you're sounding like that Pure Land Buddhism that really, it's a oneness thing, because we would want everybody to be there so we can all be there, correct?
Yes, although there are many pure lands, I should mention, not just one. In fact, there's virtually an infinite number.
Uh-huh.
Well, another point I should mention, this is from the Yoga Vasistha. Sorry to be doing so much Eastern notions today, because I do other things as well. This is a concept I personally love, and it's my hope it's the way. We encounter after death what we expect and desire. So in other words, very literally, the Christian will encounter Jesus. The Muslim will actually encounter this famous 72 virgins. The Comanche on the plains will encounter the happy hunting ground with the bison and the wild cherry juice. The Odinist will encounter his Valhalla. Mm-hmm. We all receive what we encounter. That's why it's really important not to be a materialist, atheist, skeptic. Because according to the Yoga Vasistha, what you will encounter is darkness and emptiness, because that's what you expect. So a person who dies in that fashion will think he's in a coma or some kind of horrible nightmare. So it's important to direct your thoughts in a positive way.
Right.
And incidentally, I actually end the book with a quotation from Blaise Pascal, not only a philosopher, but the father of modern probability theory and mathematics. And he has the famous Pascal's Wager. He's talking about faith in the Christian God, but I alter it at the final book about ideas about the afterlife. And let's say you're a skeptic and you think there's no afterlife, that you're going to turn into ozone and fertilizer when you die and that's it. Well, a gambler, everyone will end up the same place. So you gain no advantage believing in that, because everyone will end up in the same place. But if there is an afterlife, especially if it's a paradise, you become the big loser. at the gambling table. Yeah. You've chosen to believe in nothingness when there is something.
Don't you think they're losing in this life too? Because it's a pretty miserable, nihilistic existence. You know, if there's no meaning, if there's no depth, if this is it, that can be very depressing.
Exactly. Well, by the way, I should mention there's a tendency in the West. I mentioned earlier, if people do believe in afterlives, it's really simplistic. For example, they think there must be a God involved. There must be an immortal soul involved. There must be an ethical dimension. Now, on the ethical dimension, oddly enough, that is completely unknown to the human race until the emergence of the farmer and civilizations. Hunters and gatherers who believe in afterlives, they think they all go to the same place. It's normally to the West, a wonderful world to the West, but they all go the same place. Evil, good, everyone go the same place. And it's curious, we don't get the afterlife ethical dimension until the emergence of civilizations. And it seems to be for social control reasons. It keeps the people alive. The poor man who is starving, he looks up and sees the rich man on the hill in the big house. And he's told, keep quiet, don't break the law, because that man on the hill will be punished in the next world and you will be rewarded. So I think probably ethics has very little to do with it, especially since ethical systems vary so much.
Sure.
The Dyaks of Borneo, if you have taken a lot of human heads, you have them, even though everybody goes to the same location, you have greater stature in the other world. In fact, we forget, and this is one of the most fundamental misunderstandings of world religions and traditional religions. In some religions, violence is a religious act. Among the Plains Indians, the Comanche, I mentioned them once before, a brave warrior who perhaps dies bravely under torture, that's an honorable ethical behavior system. He's killed a lot of people and he died bravely. And this notion that everything is just love and peace and tolerance, that's a decent position, but it's not a universal ethic, if you will.
Emanuel Swedenborg, the Christian mystic, believed that the other side was so similar to this world that we're in today that many people don't realize they're dead. Can you explain that?
Yes, I love that. He. In fact, if you're any Christians in your audience, probably the most interesting descriptions of the other side are from the Church of the New Jerusalem, which is from Emanuel Swedenborg, and ironically, the Mormons. They have a really interesting concept of the other world. But back to Swedenborg, he said that literally, I can't really explain it more, that it's an exact replica. And in fact, people don't even realize they're dead because they're expecting something different when it's not. And in fact, he claimed he was a scientist and an aristocrat in Sweden. He claimed over years he was having these visions of God and the other side and the dead, heaven and hell and so forth. He described with great detail. And frankly, he has a really interesting depiction of heaven and hell. And essentially, again, to simplify, he says we spend 30 years in the land of spirit, and that's where you'll see your relatives and friends and so forth. And again, it looks exactly like this world. You start to gravitate to a final destination, heaven or hell. Now, you're not damned to hell. According to Swedenborg, just as a frog is unhappy in a beautiful pasture with flowers, he likes a swamp. Evil people are drawn towards wickedness and violence and rape. And they gravitate. God doesn't send them to hell. They gravitate there. And he describes it as a kind of a slum. And they prey upon one another. And he says in the next world, here we have our face from our parents. But in the next world, our face illustrates our moral, our loving, our ruling love, he calls it. So an evil person will have a really repulsive appearance. He'll be living in a kind of slum-like, horrible place. But he's happy there. Aleister Crowley said he'd be bored in a heaven. And David Lloyd George said that. So Aleister Crowley is now, who died in 1947, is partying in some backstreet alley in this place. Now, meanwhile, Swedenborg said the good people, let's say imagine the church ladies, an 85-year-old, 90-year-old church lady who bakes apple pies and is always sweet and nice to everybody. She gravitates towards this beautiful place with good people. They're loving, they help each other, they're nice. She's not given heaven, she gravitates there. And because she's a good person, even though she died, let's say at 92, to have the face of a beautiful young woman, and old men who die will have handsome young faces. In other words, he doesn't make God responsible for these locations. He essentially says that we choose them because we're happy there. Mm-hmm. A church lady is happy singing hymns and baking apple pie.
Feels to me to be a kind of a metaphor, though, you know, and
he means it literally.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Very interesting. Because I think plenty of us create our own heavens and hells right here, regardless of what is going on and just how we want to interpret it and what we want our attitude to be.
I should also mention, this is kind of surprising probably to most of your audience, the first religion or culture to develop the concept of eternal damnation is actually Christianity. It doesn't exist. The Buddhist hell, if you're really, really, really wicked, it's 200 million years, and then you're out. You've exhausted your karma. In Jainism, they have the concept of these pathfinders. That's an Indian religion that lead us and teach us. And in the next cycle of the universe, there'll be a new pathfinder. We just had the 24th one around 500 BC, and that was the last one of this universe. The next pathfinder is presently burning in a hell for a crime, but he will be the next teacher. In the East, we're never beyond redemption. And you can also, in the East, your next life can be, you can become a god. If you become a god, you'll be a god for 3.5 million years. And then you've exhausted your karma and you're reborn, typically lower as a human.
And the Mormons believe that too, right? That you can become a god?
Yes. Yeah. In fact, oddly enough, it's interesting. The Mormons have received all, and by the way, I'm not endorsing any of these groups. I'm just describing them because I get all kinds of hate mail when I say and the Mormons have been attacked endlessly. And their idea, it's in fact, the notion that Joseph Smith Jr. from upstate New York was able to develop this really elaborate theology, frankly, that's beyond belief. So it does seem to have some element of reality to it. And just as they say, just as God once was, we can be, we can become. God was a man who became a god. He was a man who became a god, and we can do the same.
Right.
So
some people look at Jesus Christ in that way too. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
I wish we could talk about everything. I just want to say, with your book, A Traveler's Guide to the Afterlife, you have not only all this information on history and traditions and all these different philosophies, but you've got information on how to enter other worlds, like actual instructions, how to techniques to communicate with the dead. So, you know, it's some fascinating stuff. From a scholarly angle, are you advocating for these practices? Do you use these practices yourself, or are you just reporting?
Well, I'm mainly just reporting, although oddly enough, when we do have what at SSU, the so-called Other World Society, and I teach the students how to communicate with the dead. I tell them this may not be true. I'm just teaching you how to do it the proper way, because once again, Americans have very little knowledge of these things. Probably the most effective method for Westerners, so-called trans-instrumental communication, and where you use a radio turned to white noise and a recording device, and with practice, a woman, a really highly educated woman from Portugal, former ambassador named Dr. Cardoso, she wrote a book on this. In fact, I communicated with her through email. She was not only able, allegedly, to communicate with the dead, but carry on conversation where they would answer questions.
Is this kind of like the EVPs you see on the Travel Channel with their ghost adventures? And
well, again, I never actually have seen some of those, but I should mention to your audience, a lot of these shows distort what goes on. If you, in fact, encounter, for example, a ghost, in most traditions, he will appear three-dimensional and solid. This idea you can see through them is more or less a Hollywood myth. They're translucent. And in fact, if you do see a ghost that you can see through partially, that's a ghost that's fading away. In many traditions, the dead person the ghost is someone who was prematurely killed, either through suicide, accident, or murder, and will continue as a ghost until he leads out his natural life. So he was supposed to live to 92 or 102, and he's murdered at 19. He'll walk as a ghost for a certain number of years.
Okay. But not knowing he's dead, is that how
exactly
you're thinking?
Mm-hmm. And by the way, one of the best, I don't know if this is true or not, but years ago, a young lady in one of my classes, she had a close friend that was killed in a car accident at age 16, horrible accident. And then this young girl got married at a young age, 19. And after her wedding was over, there was a reception with guests and they got married in a church. She's looking at the wedding pictures and her friend is in the picture, innumerable pictures. And she showed them to me. She showed me the high school picture of the girl and then showed me the pictures. No one could recall the girl at the reception and she's never talking to anyone, but she's in these pictures. Now, this could be a stranger, wedding crasher, I don't know, but it's a young 16-year-old girl and she's not, you don't see through her. You don't see a ball of light. She looks like a totally solid person standing among the guests. It was quite striking.
How? I mean, I think that's kind of beautiful, really.
Yes.
It has been an absolute pleasure, Dr. Mirabello. I do appreciate your time.
And by the way, if anyone has a malicious ghost, throw a handful of grave earth at the face of the ghost and he will obey you.
Oh, really?
We'll close grave earth. That's the old tradition, yes.
So we should all dig up a little bit of grave earth just to have it on hand then, right?
I got some in my office.
Why does that not surprise me?
Well, thank you for the invitation.
Oh, you bet. And I'm excited to say that Inner Traditions will be giving one of our listeners a free copy of your book. Go to mysticfix.com for that. Thanks again. Have a great evening.
Thank you.
Seeking moon to birth, rings made mirrors of the earth.
This is Mystic Fix with Julia Gordon-Bramer on News Talk STL.
And we're back with Mystic Fix on News Talk STL 101.9 and 94.1. We just had two great discussions about astral travel and the afterlife that's going to keep my head spinning for some time. But now it's time for the tarot card readings for our lucky callers.
Our spiritual journey tonight will begin.
Can't outrun your fate.
Let me tell you about you.
I know who you are, what you are, and why you have come.
Take a good look at these cards, young man. They contain all the secrets of the universe.
What does it say?
Hello.
Hello, Alanya. This is Julia from Mystic Fix.
Hi, Julia.
Hi.
Nice to hear you.
Yes. What is your question, please?
My question, where I should put my energy for my more harmony and fast growing.
So
for my career, for my success, which area in my life, which area of work I should put my energy.
Okay. So just sort of a general energy question on where your direction is.
For work.
Okay. So I'm seeing a few different things here. First off, you've got Page of Cups in reverse, which is about being quiet. And it's sort of where you are now. And it may be that you're just quiet because you're confused or uncertain about this direction. But the cards are kind of advising you to speak up more about what you're doing and what you care for. Cups are very much around love and emotion and creativity. And it's opposite the Fool card, which is about being in total joy and having fun. So your first major piece of advice here is to go where the joy is. There's a spiritual teacher I love, Wayne Dyer, and he says, God feels good. And so if you have a creative project, a creative kind of work, I would say go for that. You've got the Two of Swords right now, which is kind of feeling a little bit paralyzed, a little bit stuck. But the next card is the World. So sometimes, especially with the Fool in your environment, the World and the Fool together can indicate traveling. And can, if you're talking about work, it's some sort of work where you are not in one place. So you may be going from city to city. You may be having productions or events or some kind of happening in different places. I am seeing that's where your strength is, which is represented by the Strength card, but you're not doing it right now. I want you to focus on the joy, on the blessings. I want you to, your top card is the Five of Pentacles in reverse, which is saying, let's not make this about money. Let's make this about joy. You've got the Queen of Swords in reverse also, so you have some lessons to learn on management and just taking charge for yourself. I don't think you're quite stepping into your bravery yet. I want to see you make some plans to go across the country or around the world doing your creative work. And that to me looks where the strength is and where the joy is. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you so much.
Maybe it's
about moving, because I'm thinking about moving and I'm a little bit stuck because I'm thinking, should I change place of my life?
That travel can certainly include moving. To me, there seems to be fun and it wasn't looking so much rooted down as just going, mm-hmm. as just traveling though. All right?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Thank you.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Yes, sir. Bye-bye.
Alice.
Hello, Alice. This is Julia from Mystic Fix. How are you?
I'm well, Julia. How are you?
I'm doing great. What's your question for me today?
So my question is, I'm dealing with a lot of physical pain like in the last 10 months. And my question is, what is it trying to tell me that I'm just not cluing into?
Okay.
And what do I need to do to flip it?
Okay. Okay. So your first card is the Sun. And in a physical pain kind of question, this is about intensity. It's interesting because what's also coming to me for some reason is the bursa. I know we have bursa sacs in our joints. They swell. They get full of fluid. So I think you've got something going on either with too much intensity and or your bursas are swollen or affected here. Queen of Pentacles is next. So in general, I do see you're treating your body right. You know, I don't think that you're doing anything to abuse it or not knowingly in any case. Oftentimes she is on some sort of regular schedule or program, and that's good. But you have some advice with the Three of Pentacles in reverse, which is to stop a program. There's something you are doing that I think is antagonizing this, that you're not getting better. So, you know, in 9 out of 10 cases, like yoga is great for the body, but for that 1 out of 10, it might not be right or something else. So I would look at whatever your routines are and see if you can't either change up your routine or stop something for a while and see if the pain doesn't go away that way. Now, your top card is the Three of Cups. And in a physical pain kind of question, I mean, this is just about focusing on the joy, focusing on the things you want. We all have a tendency to, you know, when we hurt, we think about it and that kind of magnifies it and feels it. And we feel it more. And so what I would like you to do is maybe think about distracting yourself with fun, with friends, with good times, just to sort of help the healing and get your mind off it. I am absolutely certain this is a phase because Ace of Wands is your next card in the next 6 months is when it's showing up, and that's a new beginning. So I would hate to see you go through this for as long as 6 months, but I think if you change up your routine and if you just like I said, seek the fun, seek the joy a little more. You can ease out of this a little bit faster. But on the route you're on now, 6 months, I'd say you have a fresh start. You've got the Judgment card, which does have a medical red cross on the flag, and it can be about assistance or help but you are doing better. I am seeing healing. And then this time next year, mm-hmm. it's the Five of Wands, which is like, it's not even a problem anymore. So this is a temporary situation, but try to ease up. You're doing something too intensely. And I think you have swollen bursa.
Got it.
Okay.
Well, you're right about the, thank you so much.
You bet. All right. Great hearing from you. Take care. Before we go, if you'd like to meet me in person and try a tarot card reading for yourself, I'll have a table at the KC Metaphysical Fair at the Ameristar Casino in St. Charles on April 7th, 8th, and 9th. Check out my social networks or write me at mysticfix.com for more information. I want to thank our sponsor, Comma Flight, at the Chosen Retreat Center in Sebastian, Florida. Redefining the dance between the masculine and the feminine. Visit at Comma Flight. That's KamaFlight on Instagram for videos, links, and more information. Well, that's another episode of Mystic Fix. If you enjoyed this, please like and subscribe to the podcast or videocast. Subscriptions are the way we get found in searches, and it really helps. You're listening to Mystic Fix on 101.9 and 94.1 News Talk STL. Until next time.